Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast. We're online at soundcheck.org.
This month on the program, we're looking back at music from the summer of 94. By that time, the hip-hop world was buzzing about a young, new rapper from Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. He was born Christopher Wallace, but when he released his debut full-length in September of that year, we learned to call him Biggie Smalls, or the Notorious B.I.G., or even occasionally Big Papa. The album was called Ready to Die, and it quickly made the Notorious B.I.G. a megastar in the music world. Tracks like this one, Big Papa, landed in the top 10. The album went platinum several times over, and New York returned to the vanguard of hardcore rap. Joining me for a look back at Ready to Die by the Notorious B.I.G. is Dream Hampton, the music and culture writer who was also a friend of Biggie Smalls. Dream, good to see you again.
Happy to be here.
So, obviously, in light of Biggie Smalls' murder in 1997, this album has taken on a kind of mythic aura. But how important was it in 1994?
It was incredibly important. It put the East Coast back on the map. At the time, N.W.A. had fallen apart.
Mm-hmm.
Ice Cube had released, at this point, two very important records, America's Most Wanted and then Death Certificate. They'd become dominant around the entire country. I mean, everyone was playing, if not N.W.A., some offshoot of N.W.A. By the time Dr. Dre comes out with The Chronic, which is this kind of cinematic masterpiece, which everyone is listening to, including very closely Puffy, Sean Combs, there's no chance. New York doesn't even matter at that point.
It's all West Coast.
It's all West Coast.
1, 2, 3 into the folks. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the door, ready to make an entrance, so back on up, cause you know we're about to rip this. Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together.
Until.
When he's sticking you and taking all your money. Give me the loot, give me the loot. I'm a bad guy. Give me the loot, give me the loot.
This album
ready
comes
to die.
Along.
Yes.
You mentioned Sean Combs, Puff Daddy,
yeah.
Back then.
Yeah.
It's important in his career, too. Why?
He has always watched and listened to Dr. Dre really closely, and he is quite concerned with sales. I mean, there were other minor masterpieces, and I say minor in terms of sales. Obviously, mm-hmm. Wu-Tang had released their first album. It didn't even come close to the sales of something like The
And Chronic. Nas.
And Nas's Illmatic had become this huge, I mean, in on the East Coast and in the tri-state area, Illmatic was still the dominant sound, even though the rest of the country was listening to The Chronic.
Nas, why did you do it? You know you got the mad fat fluid when you rhyme. It's halftime.
So Puff was listening to The Chronic and wondering how to mix the two, how to have Nas's authenticity and skill level with the success of the West Coast.
And one way to do that was to make a record with a guy who came from the streets but had a kind of versatile flow that would allow for some radio play, for radio hits.
I mean, and versatility is the key. He had Biggie slow down his flow, which was key. New York, Daz FX was out back then. Do you remember them? They rapped really fast.
Oh,
I mean, yeah,
yeah,
Tretch,
yeah,
at the time, who, I mean, Naughty by Nature was platinum plus also, but those MCs were kind of speed rapping. Jay-Z at the time was speed rapping, mm-hmm, with mm-hmm. Jazzo. And Biggie was speed rapping too when Puff met him, but Puff insisted that he slow down so that people west of New Jersey could understand what he was saying.
And, you know, people west of New Jersey heard him because songs like this one called Juicy were on the radio pretty quickly.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with
the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? Da-ha-da-ha. You never thought that hip-hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Peace to Ron G, Brucey B, Kid Capri, Funk Master Flex, Love Bug, Star Ski. I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know, you know.
A little bit of Juicy from Notorious B.I.G. from his debut album from 1994, the album called Ready to Die. Dream Hampton's with us, music and culture writer, talking about the debut album from the late rapper, part of our month-long look back at music from the summer of 1994. And you know, songs like Juicy and One More Chance and Big Papa, if that's all you heard of Biggie Smalls, you might have gotten the wrong idea about what the rest, because I know this happened to me, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, those songs were added on at the end. Biggie's album had been done probably around the fall. He released his album September 13th, 1994, but the album was done in 93. You know, Puff is set up at Arista. He takes Big with him. They go in the studio and record those three songs specifically for radio. Puff was right. They blew up.
But now, Dream, you were a friend of Biggie Smalls.
Right.
How did you meet? How did you and how did that friendship sort of impinged a little bit on some of the lyrics of this record? Right.
Yes, I did contribute a line to "Me and My Bitch." he was asking me, "What do you do when you're really mad at your boyfriend?" And I was like, "Well, I've hidden his car keys so that he couldn't leave in the middle of our argument." And so that made its way. You know, he was just working on a song. So, yes, I did contribute that.
Hide my car keys so I can't leave. A real slick bitch keep a trick up her sleeve. And if I deceive, she won't take it lightly. She'll invite me politely to fight G. And then we lie together, cry together. I swear to God, I hope we die together.
Yeah, Big was, I was an editor at The Source, not long, but for about 18 months when I was 19. Source Magazine used to be the Bible of hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a column called Unsigned Hype that Maddie C used to curate, and we used to all vote on which new kind of music was coming in that we liked. Puff ended up hearing, well, he asked to hear what Maddie was listening to. Maddie was like, "I've got this demo by Biggie. It's just this kid rhyming over Big Daddy Kane beats, but it's amazing." So in that way, Big had come to my knowledge long before he'd been signed. He was still selling crack on Fulton. It turns out that we were neighbors. I lived on Cambridge Street. He lived on St. James. I saw him every day on the train on the way to the sea. When I realized that he's the kid from Unsigned Hype, I introduced myself. We become friends.
Yeah.
And I guess the rest is history, you know?
Well, and you know, a history that is full of these kind of disparate images. There's the pop Biggie Smalls, and then there's the Biggie who was selling crack on Fulton Street. And so much of this record is autobiographical, you know, beginning with the opening montage. First of all, he's like staking out his sonic territory. He's got the Superfly sample. The Rapper's Delight sample. And then, you know, it's just the album goes from there. But in the piece called Things Done Changed, this is the lead off. This is the first kind of shot across the bow after that sample heavy intro is done. What's going on here?
Big is describing the intergenerational schism caused by the billion-dollar industry of crack. And I think that that is the first, it's kind of like what rock and roll was to white teens in the late 50s and 60s. It separated them from their parents. It created a real wedge in the household. That didn't happen when, say, Otis Redding, or I mean, it didn't happen in R&B when people wanted to leave the church and start singing. I'm not saying there wasn't tension, but there wasn't a total fissure. That happened when 15 and 16 year olds started making more money than their parents and started acting accordingly. I started, you know, they had a lot of autonomy. Let's just put it that way. My generation of boys helped create this billion-dollar industry of crack, and the police, as Biggie said, were being called on them by their own parents. So he's talking, he's remembering an easier time in the 70s and 80s when we'd have backyard barbecues, hanging out on the block, listening to the same disco, the same funk. And then this just total pivot in around 85, 86, when these young boys started participating in the shadow economy of crack.
And the song is called Things Done Changed from Notorious B.I.G.
If I wasn't in the rap game, I'd probably have a key knee deep in the crack game, because the streets is a short stop. Either you're slinging crack rock or you got a wicked jump shot. It's hard being young from the slums, eating 5 cent gums, not knowing where your meal's coming from. And now this shit's getting crazier and major. Kids younger than me, they got the sky grand pages. Going out of town, blowing up. 6 months later, all the dead bodies showing up. It made me want to grab the 9 and the shoddy. But I gotta go identify the body. Damn, what happened to the summertime cookouts?
Notorious B.I.G., a.k.a. Biggie Smalls, his debut album called Ready to Die, the only album that he would release during his lifetime. He was killed before the second album came out. And that title, Ready to Die, I mean, it's in retrospect, Dreams, seems so prophetic somehow.
Yeah, and it includes a suicide.
At the end of the record, the suicidal thoughts.
So... I mean, it was very, you know, Toni Morrison talks about being inspired by the Russian authors. And Biggie comes from an English teacher, a mother, who worked very hard and actually very much resented that he's talked about his, you know, childhood where he couldn't afford designer clothes, because she worked really hard to put those clothes on his back and sent him to Catholic school. But around 12, 13, the pull of the streets actually really, you know, took Biggie in, even though his mom was in denial and probably remains in denial about it. I don't think you're honest with your mother about what you were doing on the streets.
But he seems pretty honest with all of us in parts of this record.
No, absolutely. I sometimes to a fault.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it does remind me of that best kind of bleak Russian kind of literature. I mean, it was very literary.
And there are kind of streaks of dark humor in this record as well.
He was hilarious, yeah.
You mean as a person?
As a person, absolutely. But I think that charm, I mean, that's part of his charm. I mean, he came to convince the world that he was sexy, and that was through his humor.
Right.
And his confidence.
And he was, kind of.
That's what Method Man said once. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think so.
So we're talking about Ready to Die, the debut album from Notorious B.I.G. It was a late entry in the summer of 94. As you said, it came out in September,
September
of that year.
September 13th.
Before the 21st, so it was still summer. But he had been around. I mean, you knew him through The Source, mm-hmm. but you also were in large part responsible for one of our iconic images of Biggie Smalls, the Rap Pages cover with the king's crown set askew on the top of his head. What was the story there?
It's a nod to Basquiat, I believe. Baron Claiborne was photographing people in crowns at the time. And I was doing a cover story. I was the editor-in-chief of Rap Pages, which is a Larry Flint title, out in Los Angeles. I was there for about 9 months. And I put Biggie on the cover to support his second album, Life After Death. And when I got the image back, I showed Puff, who hated it. He thought that Big looked like Burger King. but Big loved it. You know, he said, I don't know what he's talking about. I like it. So I ran it. I remember showing Big the night of the Vibe, the Soul Train Awards, and the Vibe party where, of course, he was killed. I put that cover underneath his door. At his hotel. He was staying at the Westwood, out in Westwood in California, and he was already headed to the party, but I made sure that he got a copy of the cover, and he texted me to tell me that he loved it. And of course, he got killed that night. We had bought a bunch of posters before his murder, so the city of New York was wallpapered with these images of him in a crown. And I meant for that to be a real statement about him being the king of hip-hop.
And then, of course, the album, when it came out after his death, was called Life After Death. And as with, you know, Tupac Shakur, he has had a, you know, I mean, his memory, his importance has just seemed to grow over the years.
He's hardly ever not played. I mean, he's always in rotation. When you listen to urban radio, when you go to clubs, he's still, it sounds very modern, that album. And I can't think of an MC who's come along and does storytelling rap, which of course G-Rap and Slick Rick did before him, who's done it better than he.
And it all started with this album, the first from Biggie Smalls, called Ready to Die, from the late summer of 94. Dream Hampton, music and culture writer, has been with us on Soundcheck as we've been looking back at music of the summer of 94 and Notorious B.I.G.'s debut album, Ready to Die. Dream, great to see you again.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
Treat me in the teepee as I lay down laws like Island Coffin. Stop it. If you think they're gonna make a profit, you'll see.
We want to know what you think about Soundcheck. Tell us what you think of this segment or about the podcast in general. Email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org, or leave us a voicemail at 866-939-1612. That's soundcheck@wnyc.org or 866-939-1612.